Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia on the 22nd of October 2016. My name's Hereward Fenton. A great pleasure to be with you today. In today's show, I'm going to be reflecting a little on the US election, and I want to try and just bring some different insights, really just my own personal take on this. And I'm going to play a couple of clips in a minute which are quite interesting. I want to try and raise something with you that that I've begun to notice more and more. It's sort of been accelerating over the past few months. There's a kind of a separation of mental, self-reinforcing worldviews among the left and the right. And this is among ordinary people, and I see it on Facebook because I'm connected to a lot of different types of people who are on different sides of the Trump-Hillary divide. And what I'm seeing is that people in each of these kind of groups kind of self-perpetuate an image, a vision, a perception of reality, which I think is quite dangerous. The people who think that Trump is the answer to America, that Trump is going to be the great leader that will help America, they tend to now see everything that's happening in a way, if it's negative, which it mostly all is in relation to Trump in terms of media coverage, they see that as just being a false indicator, and they believe that, that Trump is going to win by normal means, and they disregard everything that conflicts with that as either being a sign of media manipulation or false polling or all these things. Now, the people who are on the other camp simply live inside the bubble of believing the volumes, the mountains, the oceans of rhetoric that comes out of the mainstream media, which paints Trump as being beyond the pale, an unacceptable person, and this overrides any other consideration, and it's almost always because of, you know, Trump's personality, whether it's, you know, his behavior towards women or whether it's his seemingly impulsive nature, his what they say is unpresidential like qualities, impulsivity, lack of restraint, and they, but it's all focused on very personal things like that. And so they see Trump as being whatever else they may like about him and whatever else they may dislike about Hillary Clinton, they cannot vote for Trump, and they cannot see any positive in Trump because the media has created this this universe of truth for them about what type of a person Donald Trump has. But again, and let's just go back to the other side of the equation, the alt-right, as it's often sometimes described, they have also created a universe of truth in relation to Hillary Clinton, which is also sort of impenetrable because these people only turn to the sources that they trust to get information, and they downplay or just outright ignore anything that conflicts with that. So, you know, when we see in debates Hillary Clinton, and I'm just giving you a totally objective perspective here, when we see Hillary Clinton in the debates very clear, very calm, very concise, engaging with the audience, doing all the right things that a public speaker needs to do and which people kind of look for in a leader, and we see Trump acting impulsively, not following those protocols, not really engaging on a personal level with the audience. I mean, what I see is that Hillary has the edge there. And I don't agree with much of what she says. I certainly don't agree with her whole agenda and the people that she's, the people that she's allied with, the people who've backed her. But I can see that she has those qualities that people will respect in a leader. And what I see with Trump is he has a lot of qualities that people respect. A lot of it are maverick qualities, but he doesn't have those presidential qualities when he talks. He does occasionally, but not consistently. Now, that to me is not a driving force in who I would support. And I'm not a US citizen, so obviously I'm not going to be voting in this election. So it's just really my opinion here. But in any situation, if this were in my own country, those factors would be of minimal importance. And what I would be interested in, and the only things I'm ever really interested in, are what policies a leader is advancing to give you an idea of what type of future you're likely to get under a government with that type of leader. And of course, you know, that's always a mix of what that individual wants and what the people behind him want and what the general, you know, zeitgeist is. It's a mix of all those things. It's never just one leader pops up and says, I'm going to do all these things, and he or she just does it off their own bat. It comes about as a result of a lot of forces coming together. And a lot of it is actually public opinion. The change in what people generally perceive as important and what people want. But then again, there's always the looming question of what the oligarchies want. And the oligarchies being the banking elites and the people who own so much of the wealth of the United States and most other countries in the West, who can covertly direct agendas. But even they, at times, have to gravitate towards what the zeitgeist is, what we're moving towards. Now, I do see we're moving towards a point of change. The issues that Donald Trump has raised about immigration didn't just come from him. They came from the general population in the United States, where you've got this terrible problem with illegal immigrants swarming into the country, and many of them acting in criminal ways and not being properly dealt with, and successive governments endorsing that, you know, just giving it the green light and almost legitimizing it. So that had to come to a head at some point, and Donald Trump was a product of that. He was a product of this growing disgust at what has happened with protecting the borders, the sovereignty of the US. And it's not just the US. There are very similar trends that we've seen in Europe, in the UK, and in Australia also. And we could spend a lot of time talking about what's going on in Australia on that particular topic, but that would be a topic for another show. But there is a growing awareness among average people that protecting borders, that sovereignty hasn't been done, and it hasn't been, there has actually been a deliberate agenda to erode sovereignty, and that this actually aids an agenda which we call globalism. And if that agenda is allowed to run its course, could lead to a scenario where countries that have enjoyed a high level of freedom, of prosperity, of quality of life, could be dragged into an abyss. Because much of the world does not have prosperity and a high quality of life. And there is this tension between those who want to protect what we have in the West and those who want to erode it. And the population, the voting public, has been manipulated and has been manipulated along the lines of left and right to support different sides in this agenda. So just to return to the topic of Trump versus Clinton, Trump emerges as a product of a changing zeitgeist. His very strong support of the Second Amendment, again, also reflects an increasing awareness among many people right across the spectrum of the danger of the government having too much power. And it really is mainly about that, in my perception. It's about people recognizing that if you allow the government to remove all means of the citizens to defend themselves, if you remove their ability to engage in energetic conflict, then a tyrannical situation can develop, which would be quite catastrophic. And of course, the US Constitution enshrines this right to bear arms for the very reason of protecting the citizenry against a tyrannical regime. So again, we see Trump really is just an emblem, it's just a manifestation of what people right across the spectrum and in many countries see as the biggest threat that we face. It's not so much an external threat, it's the threat of a bloated, tyrannical government. So there's a variety of issues, and we can go through documenting more of them, but what I want to emphasize is that Trump represents these issues. And it's very important, and it's great that someone has emerged in politics to represent those needs of the people. But we have to ask the question, is Trump the one who's going to actually make this real? And it looks to me as if, and I'm just being objective here, I mean, I'm just looking at what I've seen of Trump, the way he behaves, the way Clinton acts, and I'm running all of the facts through my brain to try and get a handle on it. It looks to me as if this one is not going to get up. But it certainly doesn't mean the end of what Trump is standing for, because it'll just be next time round, someone more capable will step up and do it in a better way without so many of the controversies and embarrassments that have come about, largely as a result of quirks of personality, which really certainly didn't have any bearing on the major substantive policy issues, but which were seized upon by the media. So I hope that was of some interest to you, just my personal reflection there. When we come back from the break, I want to play a couple of interesting clips, both from Trump and also from Obama, that show you some interesting things. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And I want to play to you a couple of clips that popped up in my feeds this week, which show sort of conflicting positions. One is a video of Donald Trump speaking a few years ago. It might have been not that long ago. It might have been about 2011. It was certainly within the recent period when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. And it's a gushing endorsement of Hillary Clinton. And it's just very interesting to juxtapose this with what we've seen in the last couple of weeks. And it makes you wonder, it certainly does make you wonder about who Donald Trump really is. You know, and as I've said in the previous section there, this says nothing about the policies that Donald Trump has promoted, which many people agree with and which I agree with and which I think are very important. But it does say things about Trump that might perhaps make us be a little more sceptical. And it's interesting because I've sort of come full circle with this. I started out being a little sceptical of Trump. I didn't even know who he was, to be honest. I mean, I don't live in the US, so I never watch American reality TV shows, so I knew nothing about that. And I don't sort of have a general awareness of who the tycoons are in the real estate tycoons in America are either. I'd certainly heard his name, but I didn't know who he was. So I had to get up to speed fairly quickly with Donald Trump. And initially, I was put off by some of the extreme, unpleasant, anti-democratic things that he said, such as, you know, wanting to bring in torture and increase the types of torture beyond what the Bush regime had done. And also when he'd said he wants to ban Muslims from entering the country, which I thought was just a repudiation of the US Constitution. But then I watched some of Trump's speeches and I saw, oh, well, he's actually got quite a magnetic presence, and he does reach out and he does speak to something deep in people. And then there were these other issues about his move to change the trade balance, his move to end globalization, to bring manufacturing industries back into the US, his position on vaccines, which he said definitely are causing autism, a hugely significant statement to make. His protection of the Second Amendment, which I was mentioning earlier, and the other things that I mentioned there in the first segment. And I realised, oh, well, he actually does have some important good policies. And, of course, most important was his policy of making peace with Russia, of working with Russia, which is probably the most important topic of all. And the relationship between the US and Russia is the most serious and the most dangerous one. It could threaten everyone on the planet. And what we've seen with Clinton is just a continual ramping up of propaganda, disinformation, hostility. And what we see with Trump is an attempt to soften that. So these things certainly and must, on an objective basis, for anyone who's got their eyes open, anyone who's moderately intelligent, can see that what Trump has proposed there is the only viable solution for the future. But then everyone just got distracted by all the personality issues, all the quirks, all the silly little, you know, peccadilloes. And no one even talks really about this, except they talk about it in negative terms to say that that Trump is kind of sucking up to the Russians while they continually demonize the Russians. And then they play up this idea that the Russians have been hacking US government facilities and then feeding that to WikiLeaks, and then Trump endorses WikiLeaks, and so they further demonize Trump. So all of those things are, for me, positives for Trump. But there are these aspects to Trump's behavior and personality and his impulsiveness which give you cause to wonder and give you cause to question what his real motives are. And you could interpret this by saying, look, he's just a whimsical character, and he does just say things spontaneously. And I think that's possibly true. But I don't know. I don't really know. Now, to kind of reflect on that, I want to play to you a video that, as I said, was recorded a few years ago, where Trump is kind of gushing in his endorsement of Hillary Clinton. So we'll play that, and you can consider how that fits in with what you know about Donald Trump. Here we go.
Hillary Clinton, I think, is a terrific woman. I mean, I'm a little biased because I've known her for years. I live in New York, she lives in New York, and I've known her and her husband for years, and I really like them both a lot. And I think she really works hard, and I think she, again, she's given an agenda, that's not all of her, but I think she really works hard, and I think she does a good job, and I like her.
Do you think that she says she's out at the end of this term? Do you think we're going to see her again running for office?
I think so. I think, you know, assuming she's healthy, which I hope she will be, I think she probably runs after the next 4 years, I would imagine.
You support her?
I don't want to get into this because I'll get myself into trouble. But I
That's
just
why
like
I asked
her.
You to see me get into trouble.
I just like her. I like her, and I like her husband. Her husband made a speech on Monday at Mar-a-Lago, and it was very well received. And he's a really good guy, and she's a really good person and woman.
Okay, that recording is actually from 2012. So really not very long ago at all. And we've got an article here from the Huffington Post in relation to that interview. And yes, he's actually said that he hopes that she'll be running. And he thinks that she's a terrific woman. I'm a little biased because I've known her for years. I've known her for years. I live in New York, she lives in New York. I've known her and her husband for years, and I really like them both a lot. I really like them both a lot. Known them for years. Now, ladies and gentlemen, how does this fit in with what we've seen of Donald Trump in the last few months, particularly the last few weeks? It doesn't make any sense. If he's known her for years that well, are we to assume that he didn't know that she was as evil, as monstrously evil, as he now says she is? Is that really possible? That a man of his wealth and his obvious intelligence, with his knowledge, was somehow fooled by Hillary Clinton all these years, right up until the point where he ran for president, and then he suddenly discovers that she's a terrible person? To me, you can't just write this off as Trump being impulsive. There's still something wrong here. There's something very wrong. When I first saw this video, I just thought, my goodness, you know, I feel like I've been trolled by Donald Trump. And this goes back to gossip we had at the end of last year, where a lot of people were saying that Trump was secretly working for Hillary, that this was like world championship wrestling, and that it was all set up for him to be shot down. And, you know, if that was how you predicted it, it's played out like that so well. I mean, we've still got a couple of weeks to go, but really, if that was the playbook, then it's right on schedule. And it's sort of built up, it's built up and built up. As Trump has built up this huge wave of support and then self-destructed as he gets towards the finish line, that is almost a perfect play in order to derail what would otherwise be a very powerful movement. Because the policies that Trump is riding on are real and true and necessary policies. But he appears to be self-destructing on top of those policies. Could this be an act of social engineering? I don't know, and perhaps we'll never know. We're going to break with Truth News Radio Australia. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I'm just reflecting here on the US election. And I played there the clip of Donald Trump gushing in praise of Hillary Clinton. I now, just to balance that out and to show you that I'm not pushing an agenda here at all. I'm really just trying to find out the facts. I'm only interested in the truth. I'm going to play a clip that shows Obama savagely attacking Hillary Clinton. Again, in ways that are very deep, and can't put it down to just election strategy or election, you know, posturing. It appears to be factual and knowledge based. So again, what we're seeing on this whole stage of politics, the contradictions seems to just illustrate what we all, of course, already knew, is that all the world's a stage, indeed. So let me just play this little clip here from Obama. I believe it's from 2008.
Senator Clinton, this is the same person who has taken more money from lobbyists than any other candidate, Democratic or Republican, taking more money from drug company lobbyists and insurance company lobbyists. This is the same person who says she's voting for the Columbia trade deal. Turns out that her top advisor, her top strategist, was working for the Colombian government to get the bill passed. This is the same person who spent a decade with her husband campaigning for NAFTA and now goes around saying how she was opposed to NAFTA. This is the same person who took money from financial folks on Wall Street and then voted for a bankruptcy bill that makes it harder for folks right here in Pennsylvania to get a fair shake. Hillary Clinton's out there, you know, like she's out in the duck blind every Sunday. She's packing a six-shooter. Come on. She knows better. That's some politics being played by Hillary Clinton.
And I couldn't be prouder of the things we've done together, but I'm ready to pass the baton.
And okay, that's just an interesting counterbalance there. You can see the same thing going on. Of course, Obama doesn't get into the dirtier aspects of the criticism of Hillary that Trump does. But we can see there's just so much posturing going on. There is a game here. The game is to get the general public engaged, manipulated, and it's happening on both sides. So I want to move on now because I want to talk about some other topics. And this is very relevant. This is very, you know, it's all interconnected because while all this has been going on, while we've had these hugely controversial debates and, you know, news stories about Donald Trump saying naughty things, and then the debates, and then the new information coming out about Hillary Clinton and the terrible things she's done, there are very, very important geopolitical things happening right now. I've got an article here from the freethoughtproject.com, a great website, by the way. While Americans fight over which clown to elect, Russia deployed its largest fleet since the Cold War. Having been subjected to the intellectually insulting shit show of a third and thankfully final debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, it's now imperative Americans train their attention to rapidly unfolding events, which comprise blaring alarm bells of impending world war. Despite scaremongering to the contrary, this war, centered around superpowers Russia and the United States, would not inevitably devolve into the hurling of nuclear missiles. The likelihood of a no-holds-barred nuclear war is negligible, but the odds of unhindered conventional warfare have increased markedly over the past week. Forget electoral panem et circumses, I think that's bread and circuses. The current administration has already set in motion an obstinately unstoppable train wreck. A senior NATO diplomat who spoke with Reuters under condition of anonymity and cited Western intelligence gave the startling assessment Wednesday that Russia is deploying all of the Northern Fleet and much of the Baltic Fleet in the largest surface deployment since the end of the Cold War. This is not a friendly port call. In 2 weeks, we will see a crescendo of air attacks on Aleppo as part of Russia's strategy to declare victory there. Indeed, a Russian ally, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, eagerly accepted President Vladimir Putin's military assistance in its chaotic and complex conflict, which largely involves US-created and Saudi Arabia-funded Islamic State militants. US-trained and armed moderate rebel terrorists, Syrian government forces, and the altogether controversial Western-backed Saudi-led coalition. Considering the decimation taking place, that assistance is absolutely justifiable. Of course, that farcically simplified explanation requires the contextualization of an intricate web of extenuating circumstances, nearly any one of which could spark a powder keg. Russian military endeavors in Syria have already earned a vow by the US to defend itself, and by logical extension, that would include whichever rebel groups it considers moderate enough not to deserve being targeted. With Russia planning an all-in offensive, some analysts have warned the Pentagon could facilely decide to undertake direct defensive measures. And of course, Hillary has already flagged that she will move to bring in a no-fly zone, and she re-emphasized that in the recent debate. And of course, a no-fly zone in Syria would simply be an act of war, because Russia is now more intensely involved in airstrikes than ever before. So, and of course, as we've seen in the past, when they declare a no-fly zone, it doesn't really mean a no-fly zone. It actually means that only we can fly. And by when I say we, I mean US NATO forces, right? So the so-called good guys. You know, the good guys are allowed to have planes up there, and the good guys are allowed to bomb people, but the bad guys aren't. That's what a no-fly zone really means. It just means that you're going to deny. It just means you're going to go to war, basically. When they declare a no-fly zone, it means you're going to war. But they frame it in such a way that they're saying, oh, we're going to protect people, you know. Oh, stop all this bombing. No, there'll be bombing. I guarantee you. There'll be a lot more bombing going on, but there'll be bombing the Syrian government forces. And a lot of civilians will get killed as well. So that's what's happening in that situation, as the world, and the United States particularly, is just endlessly distracted by all these trivial little stories. And honestly, a lot of the stuff about Hillary Clinton is trivial as well. I'm not doubting that that she's done some very bad things. But a lot of it is just focusing on trivia, because certain details about her emails and things like that have been... I just think so much of a spotlight has been put on little things that we tend to forget that the really important elephant in the room is just policy. You know, what's she going to do? What is Hillary going to act on when she becomes president? And that will then be the policy of the US government, and that will involve war, that will involve changes. And that's all really we need to be focusing on. Now, I've got a couple more stories on different topics to bring to you in the last section of today's show. We're just heading to break now shortly. But I just want to talk a little bit about what's happening in Malaysia with this move towards Sharia law, and some news from the Australian front. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'll be right back. Don't go away.
weapons in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And I just want to turn to some other topics now. I want to talk a little bit about this movement towards radical conservative Islam that we're seeing increasingly now spreading around the world. And it's really moved strongly into Indonesia and Malaysia. We've seen a lot of changes in both Malaysia and Indonesia, a lot of changes in law, a lot of new kind of movements pressuring for further changes. And a lot of this appears to be coming from the politicized wing of Islam emanating out of Saudi Arabia, which obviously is connected to the whole geopolitical situation and has been fostered by US foreign policy for many decades. But as we see it proliferating around the world, it becomes more and more of a problem. And, you know, I see this more as a symptom of a problem rather than being the problem itself. And this is where I differ from many people who are up on the bandwagon about Islam being a terrible religion, and they want to ban Islam, and they want to ban mosques, and they want to stop Muslims from coming into the country. And I understand how they've got into that mindset, but it's an uninformed mindset. It's an ignorant mindset. It's a bit of a stupid mindset. And it's disappointing. And I've been disappointed in many people on the internet who simply slip into that without really applying the basic analysis, and even some quite intelligent people I've seen. But we do need to confront this political angle of Islam, which is very, very dangerous. And I've got a story here from the ABC, the 17th of October. Malaysia Sharia laws. The parliament is to debate a bill that could introduce stonings and amputations in the state of Kelantan. Malaysian government is set to debate a bill that could see strict forms of Sharia law. And this could result in whippings and amputations of limbs for crimes such as theft. The Pan-Malaysian Islamic Party, commonly known as PAS, is pushing to introduce the proposed laws in the conservative northeastern state of Kelantan. But first, the bill must be passed by the Malaysian National Parliament. And I'll just play to you a little clip here from the ABC talking about this. Here we go.
In the city of Kota Baru, faith is everything. Here, there's a strict adherence to Islam. At shops and supermarkets, there are separate queues for men and women, while signs advising women to cover up are common outside offices and government buildings. And that's because Kelantan is the stronghold of the Islamic Party PAS. Now the opposition party wants to push for stricter Islamic laws in the state.
Among the mandate from the people is that try to establish the Islamic system here, including the Islamic criminal law.
Earlier this year, PAS tabled a private members' bill to amend Act 355 of the Federal Constitution, thanks to support from Prime Minister Najib Razak's UMNO party. The bill aims to increase the powers of Sharia courts to enforce some aspects of hudud, the Islamic concept of law and punishment.
That is on the cuts in relation to whipping especially, and the cutting of limbs for acts of robbery.
Hudud has widespread support in Kelantan.
We need hudud laws to tackle crime and violence here.
Hudud should be implemented because our country is an Islamic country.
But there's unease in the cosmopolitan capital, Kuala Lumpur, especially among minorities who fear the Hudud Bill may set a precedent for other states to follow suit.
My main gripe is that it uses very outdated methods to prove things, to create evidence.
How they're implementing is going to be a problem.
You know, whatever we do with regards to Islamic laws, it must never encroach on the rights of the non-Muslim. That's very important.
I'll just leave it there. So that particular trend is quite worrying for Malaysia, which has been seen as a very moderate country, a very advanced country. And it's symptomatic of the conflict that's been created in the world by the strategic manipulation of Islamic countries over many, many decades. And I've got another article here from the ABC about Indonesia. Islamic identity used to push Indonesia into becoming more conservative. Yeni Wahid, a well-known Islamic activist and daughter of the former Indonesian president, Abdul Rahman Wahid, says Indonesia has become a more conservative society. During an all-Muslim beauty pageant in the Indonesian capital earlier this year, the contestants were asked who they thought was to blame for the brutal gang rape of a 14-year-old girl. She had been raped and murdered by more than a dozen boys. And according to Ms. Wahid, who was one of the beauty pageant judges, the contestants all blamed the victim because they made a distinction between a woman who is raped when she is covered and when she is not covered. So this horrible, brutal culture of really just endorsing aberrant, psychopathic behavior and giving it the, framing it as having some sort of moral religious justification. This is being propagated in Indonesia. And it's one of the reasons why political forces like One Nation, Pauline Hanson's One Nation, which have re-emerged in Australia, are actually very important, because this is propagating all over the world and it's being propagated in Australia too. And what I'm not seeing in any of the Western media is an attempt to target head-on the ideology that allows these types of ideas to become acceptable. You know, the sort of ideology that says, well, you know, it's okay to rape a woman if she's dressed provocatively. And in ISIS, what we see in Syria and Iraq, in the ISIS territories, it's actually like a moral injunction. They rape women to teach them a lesson. I mean, this is sick, disordered. This is very, very, very deep, darkly disturbed mental state, the people that have got into this. But it's being peddled in this kind of soft way. It's actually being peddled and propagated around the world. It's not too different to what we've seen in previous epochs with different political ideologies. It is a political ideology. And it does harness hatred and sexual frustration, which is seen in every war and in every revolution. We always see it. You know, rape, pillage, conquest. They always go together. And people are motivated. People are the dark forces and the leaders behind those forces trigger people on the basis of their psychological disorders, their mental psychological disorders. And we must never forget that this behaviour, when we're talking about rape and murder and, you know, horrific torture, drowning people in cages and public executions and all this stuff, that this is just a symptom of a deeply disturbed, sick mentality. That's all it is. The ideology that supports it is completely false. And insofar as that ideology is tied to religion, then that aspect of that religion must be condemned as false as well. And that applies to what we were talking about there in Malaysia with amputation of limbs and people being whipped and all this stuff. It's just, it has to be confronted, and that's why I think it's very important to talk about it. One last story, and I meant to actually raise this in the previous section. Again, this is happening exactly at the time that we're seeing focus on Trump's misdeeds and missteps and Hillary's naughtiness. We're seeing the president of the Philippines going to China and saying it's time to say goodbye to the US. And again, we're seeing Duterte, who is acknowledged as being a fairly maverick sort of character, but he's saying very, very aggressive things about the United States, and he's calling Obama a son of a whore, and he's done it twice now. And this would be almost funny, right, if we weren't dealing with superpowers here who have nuclear arsenals which could wipe out the whole of life on planet Earth. So you have to realize that this is very, very serious. This type of confrontation, this kind of brinksmanship that that the Philippines president is engaging in, I believe is a flag. And the article here, which was published on RT a couple of days ago, is "Time to Say Goodbye to the US, Philippine Duterte Proclaims on Historic China Visit." Now, his handlers have actually backtracked on some of the things he said, but just a couple of things he said. "No more American interference, no more American exercises. I will not go to America anymore. I will just be insulted there. Called Obama a son of a whore. Your stay in my country was for your own benefit, so time to say goodbye, my friend." Now, of course, Duterte is saying this for the benefit of the Chinese he's trying to get in bed with. But this is going to completely change the power balance of the Pacific. That's our show for this week. I hope you found it enjoyable. I will be back next week. It's been great talking to you. See you then.